don't know so much it's the most hurtful thing you say or the worst thing you say, but it's knowing what those big red buttons are. It doesn't have to be a big thing, you just gotta push it hard enough. And making sure you're the last one to push it. Those events don't go well.
You know, there were times where we'd be late already for something, and we were already in an argument, and it just festered, and then eventually we just decided that we wouldn't go to where it is we were going because we got in such heated up arguments.
I once, and I'm still like very, very ashamed of this, took my ring off and like just slammed it on the table. And like, the minute I took it off and put it on the table, I'm like, oh crap, what have I done? Like, I should not have done that. And like, even to this day, that's still something that's like, you know, of course he's forgiven me for doing that. And like, I've apologized up and down, but it's still kind of a sore subject between us.
If you say something that's hurtful during the heat of an argument, or I still carry some of that stuff with me, and you think about it and you go back to it, and even if there's apologies that have been given and the argument itself has been resolved, those words stick with you.
Hey, good morning, Reality Church. It is so good to see you guys today. If you're a first timer, my name is Lance Birch. Well, if you're not a first timer, my name is still Lance Birch. But I do want to welcome you. I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad you made the choice to be here. I also want to welcome those of you guys who are watching online. If at any point during the sermon you guys have some questions, we're on part two of a thing that we're calling Giving Up About Marriage. If you've got some questions during the sermon, you can text those in, or you can download our church app off of any of the online app stores, and you can text in a question. We carve away some time at the end. We are baptizing today. So maybe you notice it's out there, and you don't, even if you don't like being in front of a lot of people, you're going to be out there. And we're not going to project your image on screen or anything. Why would you think that? We will. But we want to celebrate that with you. If you believed in Jesus today for the first time, or maybe you believed in Jesus a long time ago, but you've never been baptized, listen, today would be an incredible day for you to make that choice and to follow him. We have everything you need out there in the back. We are on week two of our series called Giving Up. Last week, Robert did a great job in telling us that we should give up Plan B, which is the chicken exit out of our marriage. It's like when you're on a roller coaster and they've got that exit. As soon as you see how dangerous it is, you go, I think I'm going to take this. And you the walk of shame, you know, where you walk out and everyone knows you're not going to ride the ride. Give up Plan B. You are in, and you are in this to the death, I think he said. This week, we're talking about giving up the win. The win. Do you like to win? I love to win. Last night, Amy and I were in a fat penny tournament. And you guys play fat penny. It's like washers, like three. There's the game board. You toss these things, and you can score points, 2, 4, 6, or one on the board. And frankly, we didn't do well. And frankly, it wasn't my fault. I mean, one of the team members was not doing so well. And I was thinking, that was the whole time I was thinking, you know, I'm a pastor and everyone's watching me. And I'm like, I need to have that pastor look on my face like, oh, whatever, bless God, we're just going to heaven and everything's wonderful. But I didn't have that look. In fact, occasionally I would roll my eyes and go, oh, man, on the board, Amy. And is this one going out online? Okay. So I love to win. And so today, I think we need to all of us admit that, but I'm hoping today to incite a rebellion in this room. I'm hoping today that something happens in this room that changes all of our relationships, because we've got a problem and it isn't going away without a revolution. We've got a huge problem. Because, and it's not just for the married among us, we love winning too much. We love winning too much, and it's killing our relationships. And we love winning too much, and it's killing our marriages. We live in a culture where losing is the enemy. except for Cleveland, where the Browns have kind of made it a way of life. I figured I could pick on Cleveland, because who's a fan of Cleveland? Family disputes, we want to win. At work, we want to gain the boss's favor. We want to fight for the promotion. We want to fight for the raise. Social media, we want to win so much in our country that we can take an incredible, horrific tragedy and turn it into a point that we want to make. That's how much we want to win. We can take tragedy and turn it into a talking point. And that's sick. Something's wrong with that. Trying to win the battle of ideas. We fight. And in the worst case, fighting for survival in our own life. In the best case, you know, fighting just to get acceptance and love and all that. We want the win. What we're doing is not working, though. The world gives us one message: win. And it's killing us. It's killing our marriages, it's killing our relationships, it's killing us. Not only that, but we all have family patterns that teach us how to handle conflict. We've all come up with a certain language that we use in our family. The way that we know that somebody's upset or how to handle conflict. My family, we basically, conflict just went away. You have the argument, you don't resolve the argument, and then like a week later, it goes away. And we all know how that works out. You've got your family pattern of how to deal with conflict, and very few families have healthy conflict patterns. And we carry those patterns into every relationship that we have. We just do that. So I'm hoping today to incite a full-on rebellion against this destructive win-at-all-cost idea. And so to give us fuel for the rebellion, I thought we might look at Scripture. You guys down with that? Okay, good. We're going to look at the inspired and, I believe, absolutely revolutionary words of Paul, who wrote in the first century. You have to remember that in the first century, in many cases, women, I hate to say this out loud, but women were considered property. And Paul enters into the scene, and Christianity enters into the scene, and everything changes and it shifts. And Paul is revolutionary in his writings to the Ephesians. So if you have your Bibles, turn to Ephesians chapter 5. Paul, at this point, he's been planting churches all over the world, and he's writing letters to these churches, and he's getting really practical at the end of Ephesians. Very, very practical. He's been giving them this really lofty theology about who God is, and now he's saying, okay, if that's who God is, then how do we treat each other? How should you and I, in day-to-day interactions, deal with one another? And do you guys have interactions daily? Okay, good. So this is going to be practical for you too. So he's getting really... So if, turn to Ephesians 5. We're going to look at verse 21. It's what he says that you and I should do. This is how we should treat each other. And further, by the way, let's stop there. If you see an "and further" in Scripture, it's basically that Paul is saying, in addition to everything else that I just said, I'm going to add this on. What was all the other stuff? He said, listen, be wise with the way you talk. Be wise with the way you treat each other. Please the Spirit, not your own flesh. And then he goes on. And further, in all of these relationships, put this in there. And further, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. He's telling you and me to lose in our relationships. Okay? In a wrestling match, one submits and one dominates, right? And the person who submits, do they win the match? No, they lose. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Now, there are three types of marriages and probably three types of relationships. Number one, in the marriage, they're locked in battle. Neither one will submit. It's just like it's full-on, all-out war. And you've seen them, right? You've seen them at the cocktail parties. You've seen them, and they've created those awkward moments, in public. And you're like, oh, man, those two. And it doesn't even matter whether it's hot or cold. I mean, they could be full-on arguing, or they could just be icy and just say, something. I don't know any really hurtful statements, but, you've heard them. You've seen it, and all of a sudden it gets awkward because they're in all-out war. They've got an arsenal of weapons and words and past mistakes and withdrawal and intimidation and Everybody loses in this relationship. They're so determined to prove their point. Ask yourself this question. Am I so determined to prove my point that I will endure the mess that I create, the relational mess that I create? It's worth more to me to win and endure the chaos that I create around me. We saw a video that just kind of shows how intent we are on being right. This child, little toddler, finds what they think is an apple. They say, "Mom, can I eat the apple?" And the mother says, "No, that's not an apple, that's an onion." And the toddler argues for a while, "No, it's an apple." And finally the mom gives in, and this is what happened. Right about now, that toddler's realizing, hey, this doesn't taste like an apple. But I'm determined, and I'm going in for bite number two. Oh, boy. Ugh. Starting to cry about now, but I'm going in for three. I'll prove you wrong. It's a good apple. And four. Absolutely crying. We'll absolutely torture ourselves before we'll admit that we're wrong. In the context of a toddler, it's funny, but when you're a toddler and you're married, it's not. Two people, neither one submitting. There's another type of marriage, there's another type of relationship where one submits. One says, okay. One backs off, says, you win. And now in this marriage or in this relationship, there's wins and losses, but the roles are set and one person's winning. One person dominates. The loser is always the same spouse. These are truly abusive relationships where one dominates, but both are stripped of their dignity. These are the marriages of addicts and enablers, of tyrants and slaves. Perhaps mainly, this might be the worst or the saddest type of marriage of all. And what's weird about this type of marriage is that the one who's getting submitted to doesn't even really fully realize it. Things are just going well. The dominator doesn't know that they're dominating. They can live for years in happy, ignorant bliss. It's just things are going well. I mean, I want it this way, it goes that way. Hey, that's awesome. Don't make the mistake of thinking that just because there's no complaint that things are going well. Sooner or later, somebody's going to implode or explode. Where one submits, it's a sad relationship. If you keep on chalking up personal wins in your marriage, pretty soon that's all you're going to have. Is personal wins, and you're going to be alone. So that's one type. But there is, thankfully, another type of way of doing marriage. And that's this. Both submit. Both submit in this marriage. This verse that we just read speaks of the rebels among us. The revolutionaries among us. Now, these marriages aren't perfect. Not even close. They're not even close to being perfect. But these people have realized something very important. They've realized the huge difference between conflict and combat. We discussed this in a marriage series a ways back, where conflict doesn't necessarily have to lead to combat. Let me ask you a question, and this is not a rhetorical question. I want you to answer it. What is the goal of combat? To win. I want to win. I don't want you to lose. That's the goal of combat. I've got every tool, and I can use it against you. I can compare you to your mom, or you can compare me to my dad. You know, it's in there. I got it. It'll be a disaster when I use it, but I got it. Combat, I want to win. But conflict, the goal of conflict is not to win. The goal of conflict is intimacy. I want you to know me. I want you to know what I'm concerned about. I want you to listen to me. I want you to attend to me. Conflict is going to happen in marriage. Conflict is not a sin. It's a thing. It just happens. We don't have enough time. We don't have enough money. I don't have enough energy. Conflict happens. Combat doesn't have to happen. And these people know it. They're submitting to each other. They're racing to the bottom. As Robert said, these people have made a decision. The decision has been made. Two people have decided to love each other to the limit, to sacrifice the most important thing to themselves, themselves. So we're in. This is not the mythical unicorn of the 50-50 marriage that you hear about. You know, marriage ought to be 50-50. You know, and the marriage is not 50-50. Divorce is 50-50. That's where you divide everything down the middle. Marriage, and some people say, well, marriage ought to be 100-100. Everybody give it 100%. That's also a myth. Marriage is 100-0, and it switches. It's digital. It's one person's giving, the other person's, you know, being served. You know, one person's getting their back scratched, the other person is the one scratching it. It doesn't work the other way, both people scratching backs, because they miss a spot. And that's infuriating, isn't it? It's like, just an inch up. Are you listening to me? I don't know why I get... Maybe I've told you a little bit too much about myself. This is the marriage where both are racing to the bottom to see who can lose the most. So what I'm asking us to do, and listen, I know the temptation during a sermon is to say, oh, that was a nice talk. I really want you to try this. I want you to choose to lose in your marriage. Choose to lose in your relationships. Make the conscious choice. I'm going to lose this argument. How fun would that be? You set out to lose the argument. I'm just going to listen to her. I'm going to see what she says. I'm going to say, that's a good point. I really do need to change that about myself. I've been disappointed with myself lately as well. Can you imagine if the conversation turned that way? I mean, she would absolutely pass out. That's something I've been working on, and I think I'm going to do better. Choose to lose. Mutual submission. Who can lose the most? And then Paul goes on. Here's where it gets slightly controversial. But I don't think it is at all. Ephesians 5:22. For wives, this mutual submission means this. Submit to your husbands as to the Lord. Wives in the room, if you're a wife, submit to your husband as unto the Lord. I say that with too much authority. Understand here that Paul has already talked, since we're already talking about mutual submission, Paul goes on to talk about what it looks like and how it works out practically. Jesus has never asked anyone to do what he wasn't willing to do himself. And how easy is it to submit to the Lord? Why, guys, is it easy for us to submit to the Lord? Why, men, is it easy for us to submit to the Lord? You know why? Because we know he has our best interest at heart. Because we know that he loves us, that it's not self-serving, that he's not trying to vampire life from us, but he's actually life-giving. He's not trying to get us to do stuff for him. He's actually trying to serve us. And some guys are making it almost impossible for this to happen because they don't have their spouse's best interest at heart. This is not about remote controls and sandwiches. This is not about sex and compliments. This is about a wife looking at her husband and saying, you know who you remind me of? You remind me of the one who washes feet. You remind me of the one who gives up everything. You remind me of Jesus. Now, guys, come on. That's a lofty goal. But we can get there a little bit, right? We can have the heart towards our wives that is the heart of Jesus towards them. We're going to mess up. But it's easy to submit to Jesus because we know he has our best interests at heart. So wives, I'm going to turn this back to you. Choose to lose. In your relationship with your husband, choose to lose. Submit to him as unto the Lord. And guys, Paul goes on. He says, now, and he actually gives guys a more far-reaching, overarching submission. And here's how it goes. For husbands, this means love your wives just as Christ loved the church. And if I have to remind you what Christ did for the church, here's what he did. He gave up his life for her. He gave up his life for her. And you won't give up Call of Duty. He gave up his life. It's so easy for us to forget that that is a submission. Jesus condescended to us. He wrapped flesh on deity. He died for us. He allowed himself to be made a fool of for us. There's no bigger loss than to be considered a loss by the whole world. Dying a criminal's death on the cross so that everyone can make fun of you. Jesus loved us that way. And we are to love our wives that way, men. We put ourselves in the way to look foolish, to look like the loser. We put ourselves as the barrier to say, like, this is on me, it's not on her. Jesus was willing to give up everything to become what would look like to the world the biggest loser in history, to become a joke to the Romans and the religious leaders of the day, to sacrifice everything on behalf of the one that he loved. Choose to lose, men. Drop the I've got to win at all cost, men. Drop it. Choose to lose in your relationships. And hey, if you want to, make it a mental game. Call it a win. You know, if that helps. Yeah, I lost that one. Ching, ching. I got the second to last word in that argument. Yeah. See, in marriage, losing is letting go of the need to fix everything in your partner, listening to the darkest parts of who they are with heartache and not a solution. It's being present in those painful times. It's doing what's right for the other one, even if it costs you greatly. It's eliminating the things that you love if they're keeping you from loving your spouse well. It's knowing that your spouse will never, get this, never fully understand you. I just want to be understood. Your spouse will never fully understand you. Number one, you're that messed up and complex. But we just don't have the capacity in our own minds to understand ourselves. And you're asking us to understand you? We don't have it. They're never going to, listen, here's another one. They're never going to love you unconditionally. Your spouse is never going to fully love you unconditionally. There's always going to be little strings attached because they're broken too. It's knowing that they're not going to get you and knowing that they're not going to love you unconditionally and loving them anyway. By the way, if you're thinking, why wouldn't they love me unconditionally? Because you're not that awesome. That's why. I have a quote that I put up here from time to time, but I think it's true. It's my own quote. I think God gave it to me. Everybody in your life is either giving you grace or getting sick of you. Everyone in your life is either saying, I'm going to let that pass, or they're getting sick of you little by little, day by day. It's true. Now, you know, I'm not saying that you're not deeply loved by God. You are. And I'm not saying that you're not, you don't have the fingerprint of God on you, you don't have the glory of God in you. You do. But we're broken. And people are either giving you grace or they're getting sick of you. Losing in marriage is forgetting the rebuttal, and leaving the zinger unsaid. You know, like, I've got this. Oh, man, you left yourself open there. I am going in. No, it's leaving that unsaid. It's consistently getting the second to last word in. If marriage is going to work, I think Paul is telling us, if marriage is going to work, it needs to become a contest to see who's going to lose the most. And that race needs to go down to the wire. It's full-on rebellion to our way of thinking. It's full-on rebellion to our culture of win. The concept of mutual submission is helpful, though, I think, in every single relationship in your life. So if you're single, or if you're, you know, you're divorced or whatever it is, the concept of mutual submission Paul is giving to the church, to all of us, I think it really helps every relationship, and it's countercultural. So I want to give you some practical steps in order to work this thing out. Number one, listen. Listen, attend, be attentive to the person on the other side of whatever conversation. Listen to your spouse. Listen to your boss. Listen to your dad. Listen, attend. Put the device down. Put it down. Have a device-free day. How about that? That would be great. Remember when we didn't have devices? I remember. We didn't have. We had to be stuck with our own thoughts and stuff. Deal with our own life. Think of things. Now it's just like, oh, if I match this jewel to this jewel, there's an explosion. Be attentive. And then after you attend, like really, when I say attend and listen, I don't mean be 4 or 5 steps down the road and thinking about what you're going to say. Because then I want you to, after you listen, respond. Respond not in a way that has your agenda. Respond to what they've said. Can you imagine if somebody was really listening to you and you get through talking and they talk about what you talked about? It seems like we're talking past each other a lot in our world today. Just like, you say what you say, and then I'm going to say what I was already thinking about saying. Respond to what they said. And that's the place where we can resolve things. This is the place of apologies, real apologies. Not, well, I'm sorry you got your feelings hurt, but you know you've been a drama queen for your whole life. I'm sorry that hurt your feelings. That's not a good apology. It's a horrible apology. Apologize, forgive, give grace. Grace meaning I'm going to give you room to grow. I know I'm broken too. I want to resolve this. I want to be more intimate with you, and let's let this conflict drive us towards intimacy. And this one is big. This is for everybody in the room. This is not complicated. Do things. Do things. You want to improve your marriage? Honestly, it's not that hard. Do things. Like, you know, race when something is going wrong. Like, race to, if the baby cries in the middle of the night, race to the nursery. Race to feed the dog. Race to wash the dishes. Race to make up the bed. And if the garbage needs to be taken out, guys, just take it out. Don't race. Girls, don't take out the garbage. That's your husband's job. Do things for them. Do things with them. I'm lousy at this. You know why I'm lousy at this? It's because I don't, and here's just by way of confession, I don't think the same way my wife thinks. And so I've got, this actually would, for me, the garbage is full at a different level than when it's full for her. If the milk carton won't fit in anymore, and if you can't do that, it's full now. And I got to get better at that. And I think, guys, you need to get better at that too. Do something. Don't just be passive. And then stop. Stop doing the crazy making things that drive them crazy. You can't do all of this. I just want, if you know something in your life that you know makes them crazy, stop doing it. And I'm talking about practical things. If you're spending too much time doing this and you know that they hate that, then stop it. Stop arguing about it's your right. Once you say, well, it's my right, I can do that if I want to, you're already way off base. Now, here's the corollary. Endure their crazy-making things. Endure the things that just drive you crazy, because that's why you fell in love with them in the first place. It's like they're so loud and talky. That's why you love them. That's why you were attracted to them in the first place. Endure their crazy-making things. And then prioritize. Prioritize them. Let them know that it's not the kids. By the way, here's a huge thing. The kids are not the most important people. That's not the most important relationship in your family. It's just not. If you have them as number one, you're messing them up. They don't want to be number one in your life. You look across the dinner table at your spouse, they're number one. And when they are number one, you raise healthy kids, because they don't want to be the center of your universe. You got to raise them. They don't want to be your best friend. Prioritize your spouse. I know when you hold those babies, you think that, you know, they hold the world, but you made that baby with somebody else. Look across the dinner table at them. They're your priority. Racking up, let me say that another way. Take losses everywhere else. Prioritize that. Lose everything else. Racking up small losses will lead to a big relational win. So I'm asking you again, Don't just take this home as a nice idea. This is a practical idea. Choose to lose. Pick an argument today and lose it. You know, pick some free time today and lose it. And prioritize something else. Take the personal loss to get the relational win. Now, I know when we talk about relationship stuff, there's always, you know, specific questions that people have, and I want to get to those as we can. So let's see what we're talking about so far today. Oh, by the way, if you're watching online, you can text in questions and we will put them up here as well. So, how do you get out of the cycle if your marriage is the one with one submits? I believe my marriage is the one of the addict and the enabler, and I am the enabler. How do I change from submitting? How do you get out of that cycle? One thing that I would tell you is please get in touch with us after this, because there are some like situations in marriage that actually do need, and this is a good thing, outside perspective as to what's going on. I wouldn't say to you, I'm going to stop submitting. I just think that in some cases you need to stop being a doormat and an enabler. And I think that sometimes outside help can help you put the pieces together as to how did this happen. And we do have marriage counselors and people that we recommend and re-engage and other things. But you can't wake up for somebody else. You can't come to a realization for somebody else. They have to come to the realization themselves. So if you're in an addict-enabler relationship and the addict doesn't know that they are an addict or that this is damaging things, then you can't make them come to that conclusion. So you need people praying for you, but I also think that in some cases you need somebody to sit down and say, here's what's going on. And so I have recommendations for that, and I think that would be really helpful. You also need people in your life that are supporting you emotionally. Don't talk bad about your spouse. Don't demean them. Don't strip them of their dignity. But do have people that will support you and pray for you during this time. So I hope that helps, and I hope that you'll contact us. How do we distinguish between conflict and combat? Sometimes there's a misinterpretation between the two, as you explain definitions. I would say the goal is what delineates them. The goal of conflict is intimacy. The end result of conflict handled well is I know what you wanted. I know where I fell short. I either apologized, there was forgiveness and grace given. Conflict happens. It happens in parking lots and food lines and, you know, eight items or less, express lanes. It happens everywhere. Combat doesn't have to happen. Combat is a choice. Conflict is the environment in which combat can spring from, but it is not the same thing. A perceived lack of time and resources is all it takes to have conflict. Now, how are you going to deal with it? Conflict listens, responds. Conflict actually puts myself into the other person's shoes. Conflict is a beautiful thing. In fact, it's one of our planned values as a staff, and it leads to creative solutions. Combat leads to heightened heart rates and tight necks and fight or flight and all sorts of bad decisions being made about what you say or what you do. So there's a very thick line between conflict and combat, and you need to keep those two in mind. It doesn't mean that you don't feel passionate. You speak with passion. Combat intends to hurt. Combat intends to inflict. And so you know you've crossed the line. When you start, what is my motive is a good question to ask. Do I want to win here, or do I want to understand and resolve? Great questions to ask when you're involved in conflict. I hope that helps. How do we balance losing versus being taken advantage of? It kind of goes back to this one. If you're in a one submits relationship, bottom line, that's unhealthy. And nobody needs to be a doormat. Really, what Paul is saying here is this only works It only works if both have the other's best interest at heart. So in that case, I really do feel like there's not a balance there as much as it's digital. Either both are saying, I want your best interest at heart, or they don't. And let's be honest, we all have mixed motives on our best day, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But by and large, the whole picture of the marriage is two people, imperfect and broken as they may be, who want the best for the other. If it's not that, then I would suggest re-engage, and I would suggest, you know, getting some outside voices into the relationship. And it can also happen in the context of life groups, where you get very, very honest with your life group and you say, this is what is going on. This is what's happening. But guys, I see this idea of a marriage of losers, and I see that it can really revolutionize our relationships, the way we deal with each other. I really do want you to go out there and lose today and do your best to chalk up a loss in an argument or whatever and just say, I'm determined. It might be where both partners just say, no, I'm losing, and then it becomes, oh, very sick. I hope not. This is a good rebellion, and the really good rebellions leave us feeling whole and healthy and healed, and that's what I want to see in our marriages. If you listen to the gospel today, you heard it maybe for the first time and understood it, during this song, I want to invite you to do something. I want you to go out back there and just say, I want to follow Jesus in baptism. I've never done it. I believed in Jesus maybe for a long time or maybe just today. I want you to go out there and listen, nobody's going to be looking at you. They're just going to be standing up and singing. Just head out there and say, I want to talk to somebody about being baptized. Is this for me? Yes, it's for you. The best thing that you could do today is to lose all of your pride and lose all of your insecurities and say, I want to follow Jesus because he has my best interest at heart. And this one step of obedience is meaningful. And I want to do this weird thing of getting dunked in water to show him I'm not above that. I want to follow his example and I want to follow him for the rest of my life. It's significant. And I highly encourage you to do that. As we sing and you guys stand up, head right out that door and say, this is for me. I want to be baptized. I want to follow Jesus. Let's do that together. I'm going to pray for you. Let's stand and I'm going to pray. Father, I pray for each person in this room, for the marriages in this room. But more than anything, I pray for people to be set free from their own insecurities and their own wonderings of whether this is for them. I pray that they would follow you in baptism today, that we would be able to celebrate that together as a church. It's in Jesus' powerful name we pray. Amen.